Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 344 of The Law Entrepreneur. Neil Tyra here again as your host. And today my guest is Davina Frederick. Now, I don't know how it came to be that I haven't had Davina on the program before. I've known her for years. I've followed her career as a attorney, coach, and podcast host. For a long time now, I've been on her podcast, but for some reason, I dropped the ball and hadn't booked her to appear on The Law Entrepreneur until today. So it is with great pleasure that I have Davina on the program today. And as I mentioned, she is the host of the fabulously popular podcast called The Wealthy Woman Lawyer. And the title describes exactly what the podcast is all about. She, of course, is an attorney herself and is a coach to many solo and small firm practitioners who are looking to grow their practice. So she's a perfect fit for The Law Entrepreneur, and I don't know why we haven't had her on before, but without any further delay, here is my friend Davina Frederick. Davina Frederick, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I can't believe that you haven't been on the program before. If somebody had asked me, have you had Davina Frederick on The Law Entrepreneur? I would have said, absolutely. She's fantastic. So I think we've talked enough. We've run in the same circles enough that somehow I just missed the boat and having you on the program. So I'm glad you're here today. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Thank you so much, Neil. I appreciate it. I know that I had you as a guest on the Wealthy Woman Lawyer podcast, and I could have sworn that we did an interview as well, but somehow we don't. It's the lost. It's like the Beatles. It's the lost sessions, yeah, right?
Right. It could show up years from now on HBO.
Exactly. So I'm Davina Frederick, and I am the CEO and founder of Wealthy Woman Lawyer, and I coach women law firm owners in scaling their business to and through $1 million with total ease. So that's kind of a short, my elevator pitch there. Yep. I've been an attorney for 15 years, and I'm about to celebrate in 2023, 10 years of being a coach to professional services businesses, including women law firm owners. But over time, a few years ago, I scaled down to focus just on women law firm owners, because that's who the majority of my clients were anyway. So how I got here, well, it's probably a long story, so I'll try to keep it fairly brief, but I was in marketing before I became a lawyer. So I had a whole other career. My degree is in journalism. And when I graduated from undergrad, I was living in Orlando and I had gotten married and we weren't going to be moving. And there wasn't a whole, you know, there wasn't a lot of game in town for journalists. So there's only one newspaper. So I got into marketing and working for professional service businesses of various kinds, law firms, engineering firms. I worked for an ad agency for a while. And along about 2000 or so, I had an opportunity in the early 2000s to go to law school. And I decided that that's what I would do. And I did it with the intention of starting my own law firm right out of law school, because by the time I graduated from law school, I was 40. And I felt, you know, I had a lot of business experience with my marketing background. I've been to 1,000 rubber chicken dinners, you know, throughout my career. Mm-hmm. So I knew how that getting business part works. And I thought, this is great. I can do this. Well, I kind of forgot about all the other elements of running a business of any kind. and that I didn't really know any of that stuff, but I found out the hard way, the way a lot of solos do. I grew my firm pretty quickly. I started my firm at the end of 2007. And if you remember what happened in 2008, I was through, there's a whole story around it, but basically I became an attorney for lenders. And the foreclosure crisis in Florida was really huge, as it was across the country. Florida, California, New York, I think, were the top three,
sure.
Yeah, the top three. But I grew my business very quickly. I brought in a partner. We began to staff up, and it was all going really well and wonderful. But then I wasn't really happy doing what we were doing. We were practicing other types of law as well as the real estate litigation. But it just, I felt like I was just overworked. I was exhausted. I was gaining weight. I was unhappy because I was running the whole show. I had a partner who was wonderful, but I was kind of the managing partner and very quickly heading to burnout. And then I had something happen in my personal life that just added to it. And I wound up kind of walking away from it, selling out to my partner and leaving it and taking some time off to think about how I wanted to do this. And if I wanted to do it, I wound up starting a second law firm in 2013 that was all virtual before virtual was even a thing. And I remember having an attorney say to me, kind of a mentor say to me, well, your clients aren't going to like that. You need to come rent space in my very expensive office.
How,
and I was like, no, I'm not going to do that.
How wrong could you be?
Yeah. So I wound up, all of that experience sort of led me on a journey of trying to figure out a way to do it better. I said, there must be a way for me to do this without killing myself in the process. And that a friend of mine who was another mentor, a female attorney who'd been practicing for decades, invited me to a big coaching event. And I had dabbled in coaching a little bit, you know, when I was in my 20s, but I was invited to this event. And it was one of these big ticket, you know, coaches with the big rooms and the loud music and the clapping and whatever. And it was a general business coach, not somebody specific to law firms. And I got caught up, swept up in the whole, you know, excitement of it and wound up signing up and joining. And although I didn't get what I expected out of that program, it opened up a whole new, I'm forever grateful for it because it opened up a whole new world for me in terms of opportunity and realizing that I could really create whatever kind of life I wanted and a business to support that life. And it led me to the second coach that I hired, who was a private coach. And she really changed my life because she changed my mindset and my view around my life and my business and how it all fit together. In 2011 is when I opened that law firm. I started this coaching business in 2013. So we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary soon. And, you know, the rest is history.
The rest is history. You know, it's interesting that, you know, you're ahead of the game on a couple things, being virtual before virtual was the thing. I was the same way. I'm dictated by a different interest. I was a tech nerd. I still am. And so I just wanted to, you know, show off my technical chops to show that I could work from wherever I was standing, so to speak. And so when virtual became a thing that we all had to do, in large part because of the pandemic, I'd already been doing that for a great many years. And now it's become infinitely easier than it was back in the day. And I too had people say, nah, clients aren't going to really like that. They're going to want to come to your brick and mortar office. And point of fact, I was having some difficulty getting clients. And I asked, frankly, I was associated with Women's Flat Track Roller Derby at the time. And I asked my roller derby women, you know, what's your impediment to going to see an estate planning attorney? And they said, I got to come to your office. You know, I got to take time off from work. I have to have somebody watch the kids. And well, what if we came to you? Nah, then I got to have to clean the house. And it's just, you know, kids are still right there. And it's the same problem. Well, what if we do it virtually? Absolutely. That would be the key. And so I just listened to my clients. It was, you know, so in contradiction to what some of my peers were saying, the clients were telling me they much preferred the virtual experience. And I'm at a point now with my estate planning clients that very often I never physically meet them until it's time to sign their documents at the end of the representation. So right, it's completely right. doable.
Yeah. I was doing estate planning when I started the virtual firm. I just narrowed down to just estate planning and business. Right. And I had a lot of elderly clients, and you know, being in Florida.
Right.
And I had clients all over the state, you know, they'd be a couple of counties over or whatever. And so they were relieved to not have to drive
for
someplace.
Sure.
And of course, virtual back then in 2011 was email and phone. You know, it wasn't some of the tools that I wasn't as tech savvy as you are, Neil. I married somebody who's tech savvy, thank goodness, because mm-hmm. he keeps me set up in technology. But, you know, I did a lot of it over the phone and over email, and it worked and my clients loved it. So that was kind of the runway. And I'm so excited today about all the different tools that make it so much easier to run right. a virtual business, an online business.
Right.
It's
much simpler. Now, and right. if you, you know, our listeners will know, I'm a big advocate of the Clio Trends Report, the annual report that Clio puts out at their conference about what they've observed based on the data of all their, you know, thousands upon thousands of clients. And, you know, that if you follow that trends report, the virtualization of the law practice and the productization of the law practice is increasing exponentially. So if you're a solo or small firm practitioner and you're not paying attention to that, I think you're really getting left behind, because there's going to be a time where there's going to be very few law firms that have brick and mortar, you know, settings, and more the delivery of legal services is going to be via products as opposed to right. services.
Right. It's so interesting because I look at my clients, you know, I work with women law firm owners of all different sizes and different business models. So I have one who is now a multi-million dollar law firm, and she is all remote. All of her attorneys, all of her staff, everybody's remote. They're remote, locally remote. So they're in the, you know, tri-county area, but they rarely get together in person. And then I have other women law firm owners who just still love having the office and the people in their office. And so what is to me is so fun and interesting and kind of been my philosophy from the beginning is that we should be able, you know, why not try it your way and see if your way works? You know, we should be able to create a business that supports the kind of life that we want to live and what our vision for our future right. is, because we spend so much time in our business and working, and you know, it is a passion for entrepreneurs business. Why would you create something where you're going to be miserable every day of your life? Because right. this is what you spend the majority of your time doing, right? So you might as well create something that really lights you up and makes you feel, you know, like you like to spend your time this way.
It's interesting that you focused your attention on female law firm owners. It's been my observation doing this podcast now for a little over 6 years that it is female attorneys who more often than not that are driving a lot of this innovation. You know, look, the guys are doing it too. Don't get me wrong. But if you looked at all of my guests over the course of 6 years, I'm going to bet dimes to donuts that you're going to find there were more innovative female attorneys, in large part because they had obstacles to overcome that men did not. They were trying to balance being a mother and raising children right. and leaving the workforce and coming back in on their terms and doing, just as you said, designing a practice that supports them. And in some cases, it's a virtual practice because they need that to be able to function. In others, it was a collaborative practice with other women where they can they can bring the children to the office and create that environment where it's supported as opposed to frowned upon. So I think I don't want to you put somebody in a box, so to speak. But I think that I really do feel, me personally, from who I've had contact with, is that the innovators are you guys, you gals.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting because I agree with you in that. And I think it's women and also women of color. So not, you know,
absolutely
all spectrum of women for different reasons. And I want to say, I did a survey in my group at one point. I'm always doing polls. And I did a survey in my group. Why did you start your law firm? And I had some different choices. And flexibility was the number one, the number one reason. I would say more than 50% said they started their firm because they needed more flexibility. And I, you know, law firm, I worked in a big law firm. I was not an attorney in the firm. I was in marketing at the time, but I worked in a, you know, good size law firm, mid-size. It wouldn't be considered big law, but it's big here in Orlando. And they had 50 partners. And
I'd say that's big.
Yeah. And the thing that I noticed, this was of course in the late 90s, and the thing that I noticed, you know, is law firms are so slow to change and to evolve. There's such a traditional culture in these kind of law firms. And for me, every time I would go online and I would look up a law firm website, I would see for all the partners, a lot of white male faces. Mm-hmm. And if they had any diversity at all, like the firm I was with, it was now starting to integrate some white female partners. And I just felt like that there's a whole segment out there of young women and women who've been in business for a long time, who've kind of come up the hard way and having to sort of deal with a lot of things that men wouldn't have to deal with, and not having the support through the business, right? Yeah. Not having the support through the law firm because they just aren't set up that way. They were set up to, you bill 100 hours, you know, and so you're working all the time and family was not your priority because you had a wife at home who took care of the family. And I'm really excited and encouraged to see what has changed in a generation and how much that is not the reality of a lot of younger women, because they have been able to find other law firms, particularly women-owned law firms, who say, you know, we need a different way of doing this. There's still a way to do this and be successful. There's still a way to do this and make money, but we can do it without, you know, crushing people's spirit and right. telling them, wow. No, you can't be around your family. And, you know, we're number one and your family's number two. And I just, you know, it's kind of the feminine energy that's come into this and a new way of thinking. And so it's very exciting to see. Somebody said to me the other day in an interview, they were like, it must be really exciting for you to see that I was of the generation where we were sort of laying the foundation for this. And to see it come to fruition in a next generation and see that they're able to do the things that we would not have been able to do, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm old enough, because I'm really old. I remember the start of what was then called women's liberation, the women's liberation movement. And you compare that to where we are today. You know, we still have a long way to go, and there's a lot of things that could be improved. But it's light years from where it used to be. And I find it interesting that your survey results, and you found that the number one rationale for women starting their practice was they wanted flexibility. When I asked the same question of male law firm owners, I don't have the numbers, I'm just anecdotally, the number one reason that they gave me was the ability to do the cases I wanted to take.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it was more practice area or case management selection that drove them to do their solo practice, as opposed to flexibility of schedule.
I wonder if that, because I know you probably surveyed men and women, and I wonder, you know, how many participants, because with men, would it be different? You know, would that be more of a driving factor? With women, it was flexibility and time freedom, you know, time and place freedom, I think is important for a lot of people these days. I think more and more people are realizing after the pandemic that I can have place freedom as well as a flexible schedule. You know, I can work you know, right. I can work at midnight on a, right. you know, in a mountain cabin someplace or whatever, right? And technology has allowed to do that. Technology has advanced in such a way that we could do that. And still, you know, I know my husband and I just got back from a vacation. And when you're going any place in the mountains, there are still places where you have to think about, will I have service?
Right, exactly. You
know, but there are still a lot. It's still a lot better than it used to be, you know?
Sure, sure.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Himmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I have been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
Let's go back to your emergence as a coach, though, because I think you've merged the history of your marketing background and your legal background and coaching background. I found that I could relate to, you talk about when you went to the rah-rah coach, you know, clapping and cheering event and didn't get out of it. I feel the same way about Tony Robbins. You know, I read when he first emerged on the scene, I read all of his books. I really enjoyed his books. I went to the first event, got caught up in that. I didn't sign up, and I've seen him now multiple times. But personally, I think I'm better off reading his books.
You know, yeah.
I didn't get it. It's not to say anything bad about Tony. He's done some wonderful things for wonderful people. Just it didn't resonate with me.
Right.
But his books do. And in particular, you know, one of his most recent books on wealth was really fascinating.
Right.
So I highly recommend that. But let's go back to your coaching. So I think the number one issue that faces solo and small firm practitioners, and even more so today, is how do I go about creating business? I can handle the managing the cases, I can handle doing the work, but where am I going to get the client? So with your marketing background, what's kind of your, you know, approach to that process, generally speaking?
Well, I've written a book on the subject. For anybody who wants to go into deep, I've written a couple of books, and the very first book I wrote was The Wealthy Woman Lawyer's Guide to Marketing in the Virtual Age.
Yep.
And I kind of lay out a systematic approach, but
10 bold actions, as a matter of fact.
The 10 bold actions, exactly, that you could take. So, but I do think it really matters. There are two parts that really matter. One part that really matters is who your client is, right? We've all heard the term ideal client or client avatar, where we get really dialed into not only demographics, but the psychographics of who your ideal client is. And then you have to know where they hang out. And where they hang out can be not, you know, traditionally we think in person, you know, where, what networking group are they a part of or what board are they on? Now, of course, we think in terms of where do they hang out? What social media do they consume? What magazines do they read or whatever? Like there's a whole lot of ways that we can think about where people hang out. But the other piece that I think we often forget and we don't do the work on that's so important, I know when I work with my clients, is really dialing in on you and what you are willing to do and not willing to do. Because if I tell you, Neil, you're going to have to make a bunch of phone calls and you don't like to make phone calls, that's never going to work for you, right? And yet a lot of these coaches, you know, will come up with, or marketers will come up with an idea. This is what I'm selling. So this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really fit. So the reason I wrote the book was to give solo attorneys, small firm attorneys, an understanding of marketing so that when they are approached by a marketer who is selling a thing, a certain way of marketing, that they can assess, does this fit into my game plan? I wanted to give them a place where they could create a game plan of their own that's custom. So for instance, I recommend something I call pick your mix formula. So I give several different platforms, you know, different places that we can go market, and I give key considerations for that. So you can determine whether or not something's going to work for you. And then you pick three, you know, you say that I'm going to do this. It could be a mix of traditional and virtual or modern, you know, marketing. So you could say, I'm going to do public speaking and I'm also going to be a guest on podcasts and I'm going to do reels on Instagram, right? So now you've got three instead of trying to be everywhere at once. You've done the homework. You know, this is where my audience hangs out. This is who I'm targeting and getting in front of. And you pick your formula of what's going to work for you. Somebody else who's not extroverted, who may say, well, I'm going to write books and articles and then go speak about them on a podcast or whatever, right? So people can pick their different mix, whatever works for them. But you have to think about you and what you're going to do and not going to do, in addition to thinking about that client and where that client hangs out. If you're over there making TikTok videos and you're doing B2B work and your clients are, you know,
C-suite,
sophisticated of a certain age, C-suite executives, right? You're likely not going to find them doing TikTok dance videos.
It's disconnected, right?
Right, right. So you definitely need to dial in on who your client is. And also I have to think about geographic locations. So for instance, a business like, you know, mine, I can use the internet a lot more and not worry about the geographic location. I'm not looking for people here in Orlando, Florida. I'm looking for people all over the United States. And I just had a call with somebody from India. So I can even go international, right, with clients. But for attorneys, if you're working in a geographic area, because that's where you're licensed, you know, you take that into consideration too. So there's multiple factors that you would take in to develop a marketing plan. That's why I couldn't say to you, you know, here's the general great advice. My advice is you need to do the homework on getting really clear. Who's my client? Where do they hang out? And also, what is it I'm willing to do and not willing to do? I know David Nagel, I'm familiar with David Nagel. You had him on your podcast.
Yep.
I've been to some of David's events, really love his message. But one of the things that he does with his clients is he says, we're making cold calls. You're making cold calls, right? And I just, like, I'm just not a cold call person. It's just I'm never going to be comfortable with it. But there are so many other ways that I believe in an attraction model and attracting people to you, and as opposed to go hunting them down, right?
Well, your point is so well made, because I mean, a couple of points that resonate with me. Those who listen to the program for a while know that I started the podcast just frankly to get free advice, because I had been working with some coaches that I wasn't happy with. And their message was, You got a network, and I want you to make 10 phone calls a week of prospective lunch or coffee partners.
Like, right.
That's just not me, dude. If that's the message, I'm not going to do that. I got to find something that works for me. So your approach to matching the methodology to what you are comfortable doing is so, you know, spot on. that I think we lose sight of that you know, connection.
I only have one client right now. It happens to be a male client, because although I market toward women, I occasionally will have men ask if they can work with me one-on-one. And he is the only one that I have using that strategy that you just mentioned. And the reason why is because the nature of his legal practice and who he gets referrals from, in-house attorneys and, you know, from other lawyers who work tangentially, you know, in his area. So, and he also has a huge list of contacts. So for him, it makes sense,
right?
Because he has such a narrow focus in what he does. He's a specialist, I can use that word, right, even though I know we're talking about lawyers. But And so for him, that kind of methodology works. But it's really slow going and not very effective for a lot of other types of business.
And for me, you know? For me personally, you know, my practice started taking off when I really micro niched down to marketing to a geographic area that's literally 5 miles from my office.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
You know, when I realized how many people were in that 5 mile radius, there's plenty of clients to go around. I didn't have to search for clients all over the state. Just search for those you know, in that area. So that made it easier to join local Facebook groups and you know, local LinkedIn associations, and just kind of get known in that little tiny sphere of folks. Let's just shift real quick. You know, we've already talked about your first book, Law Firm Marketing in the Virtual Age. I know you wrote another one that I think speaks volumes about where you put your emphasis working with clientele, and that's in developing systems. Tell us a little bit about your other book and how that fits in with your strategy.
Yeah. So I have a framework that I teach, and I have a third book in the works. Every book that I write is some piece or part of the total framework. And one of the things that is, you know, as you know, that's a huge topic right now among attorneys. If you're ever out on any Facebook groups, you always hear people talk about systems. I need sure. systems. And I found that a lot of people didn't really even know what they meant when they said they needed systems. In their minds, they had this idea of, you know, kind of automation. I want to automate things.
Right.
And it is my contention that you're conflating the two if you are saying systems and you mean automation. They're two different things. A system is a certain way of doing things in a repeatable fashion, a consistent, repeatable fashion. So you can plug in different people and they should be able to accomplish the same thing in the same way. It's a process. We can apply people to systems and we can apply automation to systems, or we can apply both of them, right? But also people tend to think when they say, I need better systems, they would think in terms of case management
right.
tools, like case management software. And so they're thinking, I need a better system. And you're like, okay, well, what do you mean by that? So the reason I wrote the book is I wanted to help people get clear on the language and what it is that, well, when we're talking about systems, a law firm, there are 7 essential systems. That's in the title of my book. There are 7 essential systems in a law firm operations. So I tend to think along in terms of internal and external systems. The external systems are really that client facing. So those things that the client, that's those systems that we're going to be using for the buyer's journey. That client, you know, they're going to find us. So there's marketing, you know, an attraction system, and then there's converting them to become clients, their prospects, becoming clients. And then we're onboarding them, and then we're doing the fulfillment and the service, which is the part where most people are thinking that's the legal work. Right. That's where we're actually providing the service that we said we would. And then, you know, we're remarketing right to them. So we're kicking them back out, putting them back in our marketing funnel. Then internally, we're looking at the systems that are common in every business. So you've got finance, people, and technology. Right. So how do we manage people? So this is the hiring, the training, the firing, you know, all of the promoting, the reviewing, all those things that go on in your people management system. The financial management system is, of course, the money. And then the technology is really about helping to select the tools, the automation, the tools, all the things that we need to help us get those things done, right? So I wrote this so that people would understand that there are different sort of ecosystems, right? And then they all fit together in running a business. And the law firm is no different from other types of business in that we need to get the customers in, service the customers, get them out. You know, we need to be finding ways to market to them and getting those prospects in. And then obviously we have other areas of operating the business. So that's really what that book is about. And I wrote it to kind of cover that aspect of the framework and just go a little bit deeper in it.
I think, the issue of semantics is so interesting because you're right. When you say systems, it means nine things to nine different people. When you say standard operating procedures, that conjures up a whole nother kind of image of a systemic approach to process improvement. One of my friends outside the legal space was telling me that in her company, they refer to it as standardized workflows. And I thought, I think that really is a pretty good description, because that's not limited to hardware, software, or people. It's a workflow that incorporates perhaps all three to varying degrees. And to make it standardized means it's repeatable. And so I've been kicking that around lately.
Well, reaction I have to that, I'll say, is that when I hear workflow, when I hear my attorney clients talk about workflow, they are talking about the workflow of a case.
Right.
And so they wouldn't apply workflow to
the operation of the firm.
Right. To something like, marketing and attracting a marketing system that we're going to attract those people. They wouldn't apply the term workflow. They would think workflow has the meaning of the case, like how we get the case from point A to point B. And so for me, system is kind of a larger, it's just a way of saying there are larger sorts of, but it is something that there's all kinds of different languages, and it's the same sort of thing as it is with marketing. When I said to you earlier, you can talk to 10 different people who are in marketing and they do 10 different things. You'll have one who sells Google ads. You'll have one who does SEO. Mm-hmm. You'll have one who does Instagram videos.
And how do you evaluate that?
What's that?
And how do you evaluate that?
Correct. And so that's kind of why I wrote both of these books was to get, it's again, to give a law firm owner a framework and a language, right? So that we can say, oh, okay, I sort of see the bigger picture. Now when somebody's coming to me and they're saying, I do marketing, I know what questions I can ask. What do you mean by that, right? What is it that you do specifically? And then I can figure out where it fits into my marketing plan. Based on, I don't mean like your formal marketing plan that's written out and printed and collated and put on a shelf. I mean like what your real true plan is for getting clients in your business, right? And so it's the same thing with the systems.
I want to wrap up here by touching on a couple of subjects that you mentioned just briefly and ask you what your view of that is. You know, I would say over the last 3 or 4 years, the emphasis on video content marketing has been palpable. And everybody, frankly, is doing videos, which is great. But I think the shift now, in a lot of ways, is moving to short videos. The shorter, the better. And so we've got things like Instagram and Facebook Reels and TikTok. And I'm wondering, what's your view on those platforms as a resource in the attorney toolkit?
Well, so again, I think you have to assess like who your clients are and where they hang out. So for instance, I know a lot of, when I started this business, I got a lot of clients through Facebook, and I enjoy Facebook because I'm a conversationalist and I'm a writer, right? And my background is writing. My whole career is nothing but writing. So I love to chat and have conversations. Well, over time, Facebook has gotten a little dusty for me, some of the politics and controversy and whatnot. Sure. And I thought, well, I want to do something fun this year. And I So I started working through Instagram, and it's really interesting because we've run some ads and things like that. And the ad consultant from Facebook said the number one most engaging type of video on Instagram is one where you are not speaking. There's trending music, you're not speaking, and you're just putting messages, like you're pointing and putting messages up on top of you, video of you smiling and pointing or dancing or whatever it is you're doing, right? And he said that is more so than speaking, that's the number one engaging content. I thought it was very interesting because, you know, we're really getting down to a point where, and I've also heard, like, don't put your solution to whatever in the caption, put it right on the video. So whatever it is you're teaching, put it right on the video, which to an old school marketer like me, I'm like, no, I want to tease. I want to get people to lead them to the next step, right? Psychologically, yes, they want it on there, but I want them to read the caption or click on the link or do whatever, mm-hmm. right? We're trying to lead people. That's what marketing is. It's the process of leading people a step closer to you with every step. And I also think people are different, right? So podcasting is huge. I love podcasting. I listen to podcasts all the time. I'm a consumer. I have a podcast. It's been wonderful for me personally and for my business, as I'm sure it has been for you. And I think there are those of us out there who, there are those who love to read. There are those who love to listen. There are those who love to watch. My husband loves YouTube and he'll watch videos and do other things. I can't do two things at once. So for me, except for, you know, I'll listen to podcasts while I'm exercising, right? I like having things on the go because I am so busy doing things. I don't have time to sit butt in chair and watch a bunch of videos. But other people love that visual element. So I think you have to think again of like who are my listeners? Who am I trying to connect with? And then you also have to think about your own interest and what you like. So I have been on a lot of podcasts. I've had a lot of people on my podcast because I love podcasters. Right. So, you know, you can grow your business any way you want. You just have to figure out what do my clients and I have in common. So if making videos, if you are working with course creators, and coaches and things like that, being an attorney on Instagram is great, or on TikTok is great, because that's who you're going to be interacting with a lot of those people. Great way to get business. But again, if you're working with C-suite executives, you might want to be, you know, on LinkedIn doing more thought leadership content, or you might be on business podcasts, you know? So I think you really have to think about, again, it's customizing, you know, there's two different things at play. There's algorithms and what the big businesses want. And then there's human
interest,
human being, and what human beings do. Yeah. There are people who build huge businesses on YouTube. I have podcasts, you know, I have videos for my podcast on YouTube. And people, I was talking to a podcaster the other day, he's like, don't even waste your time with that, because podcasters don't really care about YouTube. They want to, they'll go from YouTube to your podcast. I'm like, yeah, but there's a whole audience of people who hang out on YouTube all day. Right. And love it, you know.
And it's the second largest search engine,
correct,
on the internet.
So
if people are looking for estate planning attorney Rockville, Maryland, they're going to get my YouTube videos up there as well.
Yeah. I think too. For, you know, I want to say this because I don't want to leave people thinking, oh my God, I got to do all these things, because that's so much pressure. Again, sure. It goes back to pick one or two. Really master that. I mean, I've been doing Facebook for years before I, you know, got into Instagram. I don't do TikTok, but that's for my own personal reasons. And then, you know, I have a team of people on every channel helping me. So this is not me doing all of these things. It's also years of evolution.
Well, and that's really important concept to get across, is that you don't have to do it all yourself.
Right. You shouldn't really.
You know, because you're not an expert at that. You know,
right. Also, your time is better used elsewhere.
You know. I had one attorney who was chatting with me, and they were doing a lot of video content marketing, but it was pretty serious stuff. It's family law, and you know, they were making some great videos and getting a lot of traction there, but they always wanted to do some silly stuff because, you know, you're working in a serious practice area like family law, which has this, you know, a lot of issues surrounding it, there's a lot of humor to be found. And so they started their TikTok channel just to do the silly stuff. And just to kind of bring out some of the humor that's found in everybody's lives, and they've gotten great traction out of it.
Right.
So it's just kind of an interesting dichotomy. Well, listen, Davina, this has been so much fun. Let's tell our audience again where they can find your podcast, where they can find your coaching, where they can find your books, and let them go search on all things Davina Frederick.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity. Well, the best place is to go to wealthywomanlawyer.com because my website got my books on it, a lot of information about me and the work that I do and the work we do here at Wealthy Woman Lawyer. You can follow me on Instagram at Wealthy Woman Lawyer. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Davina Frederick. All kinds of ways out there. You can find me. The podcast is on your favorite podcast app. We are on a lot of different platforms for the podcast. So if you're not an Apple fan girl and you're on a different platform, we're there too. We're not just on Apple. So it's easy to find us. Just go to your podcast app.
Terrific. Well, again, thanks for taking the time to be with us today. And I look forward to having you back on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it. It's been so fun.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.